Welcome to week two of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. I'm Matt Jones, joined today by Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated Magazine. We are going to recap the Razorbacks' first week of the 2019 season, a 3-0 weekend. The Razorbacks defeated Eastern Illinois by scores of 15-7, 12-3, and 3-2. This week, Arkansas will play at Southern California in Los Angeles. They're going to be late games, 9 o'clock on Thursday, 8 o'clock on Friday, and Saturday night. Of course, those are normal times in California, but there'll be late games for Arkansas. And Clay, I guess that'll maybe prepare the team for the SEC tournament. That's when we've seen them play a lot of those games lately.
Yeah, they could be playing real late in those games. And, of course, it's always an adventure at night on the West Coast. It's just different conditions.
Yeah.
It's nighttime baseball. They not able to play at night for the first 6 weeks of the college season at Arkansas, and so it's something that they won't be used to going out there. But I don't know that Southern Cal's, just one weekend has got an advantage in that respect.
Yeah, we saw Arkansas go out to San Diego this time last year, and some weird things happened with Marine Layer in those games where they played Arizona and San Diego, San Diego State, and Cal Poly. We'll talk about the USC series here in a few minutes, but Clay, kind of what were your takeaways from the first weekend of Razorback baseball when they defeated Eastern Illinois in Fayetteville?
Yeah, I mean, you have to temper everything with the understanding that these are two teams that haven't been outside a whole lot, neither Arkansas or Eastern Illinois, because of the cold winter. And so don't take too much into anything. You haven't seen a lot of live pitching. And then the second part of it is that Eastern Illinois is what you do for scheduling an opener, so that you can look at your roster. They're not a typically strong team. And so, I've seen weaker teams come to Bomb Stadium. And I guess it's Bomb Walker Stadium, but it's, you're stepping up in competition. But there weren't a lot of negatives for the first weekend, and you'd have to say that this looks to be a solid Arkansas team.
Let's go through some of the notables that I wrote down. The first one, Clay, was Trevor Ezell. And the first day against Eastern Illinois, they played a doubleheader. He was 3-for-4 with 3 RBI, a walk, and a home run in game one. In game two, he was just 1-for-4, but he still had a couple of RBI. That's a player who I think really gives them a lot of options. He can hit in the three hole like he did the first weekend, and he gives Heston Kerstad and Casey Martin some protection in those first two spots. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him move up in the order, maybe even into the leadoff spot at some point in time.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. And we don't even know where he's ultimately going to line up. In the field either. They're protecting his shoulder a little bit right now. He's a natural second baseman, and had really severe labrum surgery, needed staples to fix the tear in the summer. And he's still trying to figure out exactly what he can do with that shoulder as far as the throwing motion. It doesn't affect him that much at the plate. But it does restrict his throwing. You cannot, 6 months out from that kind of surgery, you can't extend your arm all the way. And you saw just throwing the ball around in the infield between innings where he it's a short arm throw. But as far as hitting, he's got that sweet stroke. He hits it to all field. He's got power. A lifetime 330 hitter. And, you compare that to, what Arkansas has had in the past. Now, that's in the Ohio Valley. But I think he hit probably close to 400 in conference play. So I think you're going to see him be in the lineup no matter where they have to play him, whether it's DH, first base, or second base.
He's produced against good teams. They played in the regional at Mississippi State. I believe it was either 2016 or 2017, and he had a really good regional against them. Go back to what you said, though, about him, not really being at his position defensively. They didn't practice him at first base until the week of the game against CIU when he, you know, he was kind of playing over there out of necessity. They could play Matt Goodhart there. They could play Jordan McFarland there. But they have to do some other things. They have to sacrifice some things potentially. But what was interesting to me is just how small he is playing first base. He's 5'8" when your prototypical first baseman at the SEC level is 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", maybe even taller. I thought there were some plays, especially on that first day, that had he been a little bit taller, maybe he would have made the plays, you know, a play where he's extending his leg out and he doesn't quite get his foot back to the base, or maybe a throw was wide and he can't tag the runner as he's running by. I just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I think you give up a little something as far as him being able to catch the ball thrown across the diamond from third base and shortstop because of his height. But then you gain something. He's got better range for ground balls and fly balls. And in fact, you saw him charge a fly ball that the catcher should have had in foul territory. And he has range defensively. It's just not the height and reach, like you said, Matt.
Yeah. But Clay, would you disagree if we named him the Offensive Player of the Week?
No. I mean, I thought he was solid. And I mean, he took walks. He moved runners. He hit it the opposite field. And they didn't get to see a lot of him in the fall just because he's rehabbing, and, you know, they played him just in spots. But they knew. I mean, the scouting report, like you say, he was on the all-tournament team. They just played two games that year. But and I think he said the first game was against Dakota Hudson, and he didn't scratch. Mm-hmm. But whoever they played in the second game, he lit up, and that got him on the all-tournament team. I think Dave Van Horn knew when he was finishing high school in Bryant that they should have taken him. He was awfully small as a junior, I think 150 pounds, and he's 205 now. He was not fully developed, and they wanted to wait a little bit, and he committed to Southeast Missouri, and I think the Arkansas coaches were kicking themselves, you know, when they started to see his numbers at Southeast Missouri. And you know, it's just good fortune he's fallen in their lap for this year. And numerically, statistically, he might be what you are looking for to replace Carson Shaddy, who had a really good senior season. But this is the same type hitting, the same type ability to hit the ball to all fields that you had with Carson.
Of course, seen all the time that he committed. He committed really early in his high school career. They were having that great run, and their coach at the time is now at Missouri. Clay, I thought the story of the first weekend was the newcomers, whether it be Trevor Ezell or Matt Goodhart transfers into the program, or the many freshmen who seemed to play a role throughout the weekend series. You think about Curtis Washington, for instance. He comes off the bench in a pinch hit situation, ends up getting on base, helps a run score in the seventh inning of game three, and then he scores the winning run in the finale when he gets a leadoff single. You're going to score a lot of times when you get a leadoff single in an inning. Or Connor Noland, who had a great start in game two, or Patrick Wicklander, who came out of the bullpen in game three. Christian Franklin hit a three-run home run in the opener. There are a lot of new faces on this team, and we knew they were. And EIU is not as good as what Arkansas is going to see down the line, but I was really surprised to see just how well all the newcomers seemed to play and kind of play their role in that opening weekend and play it pretty well.
Yeah, you're right. And everyone that you mentioned, I would say is someone that they had a lot of high hopes for, but you just don't know. And, you know, it's a different stage. And they got off to a good start, which sometimes, you know, your first weekend, you know, it doesn't go well, and then you start pressing, and, you know, they will have gotten a lot of that out of their system with that, you know, that they're, okay, we're into the college baseball season now, and we think we can play. Of course, you know, they're going to see a different level of pitching this weekend, probably different, you know, velocity. and it'll jump up and it'll be different. But they've got that first weekend out of their system, and it turned out good. And I'd probably throw Jacob Nesbitt in there too. He's on the team and not technically a newcomer, but you saw him perform and do some things that, as far as defensively and offensively, be able to help this team and gives them a utility player that can probably play just about anywhere in the infield. And not sure that he'll end up, being the everyday third baseman, but he's going to play a lot. And, you put Ezell at second, you move Kinley to third, that might bump him out, on some weekends, but you have a reliable player that you could probably play third base, shortstop, and second base with Nesbitt, and it's a long season. And, funny things happen where all at once you're needing middle infielders, and you you can depend on Jacob.
Yeah, and I thought at third base, if I'm picking a defensive player of the week, I might go with Jacob Nesbitt because he made all the plays at third base. I don't think he had an error the entire weekend. Casey Martin had a couple of errors at shortstop. But Nesbitt just seemed to, really confidently and reliably, gobble up whatever he was hit his way at third base. And then you think about what he did at the plate. When runners were in scoring position, he singled or he doubled. Or there were times where he was called on to put down a sacrifice bunt a couple of times late in the game, in the seventh inning and in the ninth inning of the finale. And I thought Nesbitt was just, really reliable wherever you found him on the, whether he was in the field or at the plate.
Yeah, and you're going to see more of that. The bunt kind of disappeared last year with all the power that they had 1 through 9. Every once in a while, you'd see somebody bunt for a single when the defense was really played out of whack where third baseman was too deep. But they didn't sack bunt. I think it was 21 last year, which was the lowest in Dave Van Horn's time at Arkansas. I bet you see that go to, 35 to 45 this year. And they're probably going to have to manufacture some runs this weekend where, those night games on the West Coast, the ball doesn't carry, backspin balls just kind of hang up. And, you see those West Coast teams play with a lot of bunts, and that's why, the night games, you don't hit home runs. And I think that Dave Van Horn has gotten his team ready for that kind of action early in the season. You saw a lot of players use the bunt, and sometimes just as a threat, but I think you'll see a lot more bunting with this team.
Clay, you wrote on Patrick Wicklander after he came into Sunday's game, had almost an immaculate inning, 10 pitches, 3 strikeouts, pitched really well for a couple of innings and kind of ran into some trouble in the 8th. Arkansas went to its bullpen. I mean, this is what we expected from him, but I just wonder what you think of him, and I could probably throw Connor Nolan into this discussion too. They didn't look like freshman pitchers going out like you would normally see. I mean, even in games where they might have more talent than the other team, you still might see some command issues. You didn't see that with them. Wicklander, I don't know if he walked anyone. Nolan, he walked one and struck out 7 in 4 2/3 innings. I just thought that those two pitchers in particular looked so much more advanced than what you see a freshman pitcher at this point in their career.
Yeah, their control is really superb for young players, and that's what college baseball and SEC is about. If you just look box score week to week, game to game, the teams that win the series in the SEC usually are the ones that walk the fewest batters. And I know we like to look at hits, and you think, well, walks, that's not much of a stat to keep up with, but always just total them up on the weekend and you'll see. And it's kind of like turnovers in basketball. If you look at the turnovers, that's extra possessions. When you get walks, it just comes back to haunt the other team. It just prolongs the innings, and it's extra pitches to get to the starters out of the game and into the bullpen early on a Friday night. And Arkansas's pitching did that well, and I thought the strike zone was fair. It wasn't large. It wasn't small. Wicklander, that's what he showed in the fall. We didn't see Connor Nolan, so we didn't really know, other than the reports early from the bullpen workouts, that Dave Van Horn said that he was terrific as far as command. And I think that's what we saw from those two freshmen. I wouldn't be surprised before it's all over if those are two of your three weekend starters in SEC games. Yeah. Just really a nice start for both of those guys.
Yeah, I agree, too. I think that Wicklander might end up starting against Memphis on February the 27th. And I think if he pitches well in that game, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them try to work him into the rotation by the time the conference play rolls around against Missouri on March the 15th. Speaking of pitching, Clay, what did you think of Isaiah Campbell? He pitched really well for four innings, didn't allow any runners for four innings, had a perfect game going into the fifth. Arkansas has this eight-run fourth inning. He sits in the dugout for about 30 minutes, wind chills about 28 degrees at the time, comes back out and he struggles, and he struggles out of the stretch, and that's been the book on Isaiah Campbell for the last 2 years. Do you think it was cold? Do you think it's mechanics? Do you think it's a combination maybe of the two?
Yeah, I don't think we know yet. And the word all fall from Wes Johnson was that he asked Isaiah to just pitch from the stretch in their bullpen work. They didn't put that on him for the scrimmages. They allowed him to pitch from the windup,
right,
with no runners on base. But it's been a struggle out of the stretch for him, and his mechanics are so different. And I've heard you talk about this, Matt, but his mechanics are so different between the windup and the stretch that I can see that being an issue. And Dave Van Horn told me late last season, when that kind of reared his head, is that maybe that's his issue, that the stretch is what's getting him, is that he said there's a lot of college pitchers that happens to, in their mechanics are just, they lose velocity, they lose command, because the you know, they've got to pitch from the stretch to control the running game, and they don't handle it. And he says there's major league pitchers that have worked so much on their stretch that they don't pitch out of the windup anymore. And you saw Jacob Kostyshok, mm-hmm, that's all he does is pitch from the stretch. So explain to me what you've been told as far as the difference in his mechanics between the stretch and the windup.
Yeah, so basically it has to do with how wide of a delivery he has, maybe for lack of a better term. He just seems to have a very wide delivery, and it's hard to adapt that into the stretch. I wonder, Clay, this probably seems crazy to even think about, but if he continues to have trouble in the stretch, do you continue to pitch him out of the windup, maybe even if a runner's on base?
Well, no, you can't do that because it's a longer
right.
You cannot control the running game if you're in the windup. Mm-hmm. They get half a second longer for their steal, and you know, when you time guys out of the windup, it's a half a second more, and that just gives the catcher no chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, you could probably change his, you know, mechanics from the windup to shorten it down a little bit, but then you're kind of losing the whole purpose of you know, pitching from the windup if you restrict it. Yeah. And he's just got to get better in the stretch, and he knows it, and he's worked on it. And you know, it gets to a point where, yeah, there's some of it's mechanical, but then some of it, you know, can be mental, where it's like, oh no, I've got to pitch from the stretch, and here we go again.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the stretch, he's up in the zone, and he loses a little velocity, and it's just not the same Isaiah Campbell. And you know, the good news is he'll have sometimes three, four, five innings where he sets them down, like he did in the College World Series against Florida. I mean, he was perfect for, I think, about four innings in that game. So there's a lot of good, a lot of upside with Isaiah, but we still have to watch and see how this goes as far as his command and ability to pitch from the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big year for him, too. I mean, there are people who think that he can be a top, you know, two, three draft pick in June. But if he can't get that figured out, then all of a sudden, you know, it really becomes a liability for him, I think.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about that is there's probably 30 major league teams that say we'd like a crack at coaching him out of the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, probably like, so. We'll take that 96 mile an hour fastball. We know something that they don't know at Arkansas. We'll take that because it's all about development. Mm-hmm. In pro baseball, in the minor leagues, they can send you out there for 7 innings, and it doesn't matter if they hit you or not. They're going to let you pitch, and they'll sort it out. And I think that he probably could have signed for quite a bit of money last year, but he's gambling a little bit that hey, he's going to jump up, you know, 3, 4, 5 rounds. Coming back, and that could be, you know, a couple million dollars, and I get it.
Yeah, coming back really helped, or it helped Trevor Stephan. He wasn't at Arkansas the year before, but he was an 18th round draft pick of the Red Sox. He, you know, improved his stock to the 3rd round. He probably could have been higher, and of course it helped Blaine Knight coming back a year ago. Hey, you mentioned Jacob Kostyshok. I thought Kostyshok might have been the pitcher of the weekend. You know, again, it's one of those deals that maybe you don't recognize what he's doing, but he pitched 5 innings, didn't give up a run. He did have some base runners, had some command issues, had a couple of walks, but he didn't give up a hit after the 2nd inning. I just thought that he really he had quite a presence on the mound on Sunday that maybe surprised some people, and it's definitely different, I think, than what we've seen, you know, out of him in the past 2 seasons.
Yeah, he's got the ability, and he's really highly regarded as a prospect. And he pitched well in the summer, and he pitched up and down in the fall. And, you know, they were a little worried that, you know, he'd pitched a lot of innings in the summer, and they didn't do too much with him in the fall. But I think that he's the guy that, whether he's a starter or he's a guy out of the bullpen, you know, somebody gets in trouble, you know, he could be a 2nd inning, 3rd inning guy and get you to the 8th inning. So he's going to pitch a lot of innings. And just remember how many innings Barrett Lowski pitched last year. I think that's what Kostyshok will do for this team.
Kostyshok, a really good opening weekend for the Razorbacks. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to answer the questions that you've submitted for this week's podcast on our message boards at wholehogsports.com. Clay's going to stick around and help me answer those, and later in the broadcast, we'll have Joe Healy. Joe is a writer and a podcaster from Baseball America. We'll talk to him about Southern Cal, as well as some of the other opponents that are coming up on the Razorback schedule. You are listening to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. I'm Matt Jones. Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated Magazine, is with us. And Clay, each week we ask for questions on our message boards at wholehogsports.com. And this week we got quite a few. And the first one is talks about Arkansas's ranking. They're number 12 in the coaches poll. That's the poll that we use for record. And, you know, someone asked, what was the reasoning for Arkansas being even in the top 20? Dave Van Horn said when he sent the players home for Christmas, he told them, hey, you're not going to be ranked. And then they come back, and not only are they ranked, but they're ranked really high in a lot of polls, in all the polls, really. It seems to me like that's probably a reputation ranking based on what they were able to do last year in Omaha, but also what they've been able to do over the course of the last few years in recruiting and on the field.
Yeah, I think your reputation is part of it, and I think that that's respect for what Dave Van Horn does every year. But I think you also have to look at the heart of that lineup when you've got some returnees like Isaiah Campbell and Matt Crone, and but they've got some upper level players that are returnees from that. And, you know, they lost a lot in the draft and in senior graduation. You know, guys like Luke Bonfield, it, you know, maybe he didn't get the draft stock, but he was an RBI guy for, you know, for a better part of three seasons. But you've got Dominic Fletcher to anchor the, you know, the outfield and center field, as good a defensive player as you could have. You've got, you know, all SEC first teamers in Casey Martin and Heston Kerstad. And then you've got the best closer in college baseball. That's a pretty good core. And then you look at some of the arms that Arkansas has recruited. And I think there's respect on a lot of different levels with what Arkansas returned and what they had. I can remember talking to Chris Curry, the ULR coach, who's Dave Van Horn assistant coach, after that scrimmage in Little Rock against the Razorbacks. And he just started ticking off the players on the Arkansas side. And he's just pointing to guys as they were coming off the field. And he's like, that they really are talented. So they may not have the firepower in the batting order like they had last year, but they still have a lot. And he says, I think they're going to pitch better than they did last year as far as the bullpen, the middle of the bullpen, not so much Cronin, but just the depth of the pitching staff might be a little deeper this year. So, you know, the team's not quite the same, but it's still really good. And, you know, it's they will be solid in the rankings, I think, for most of the year.
Speaking of Chris Curry, he was a pretty good catcher, coached a pretty good catcher at Arkansas, and James McCann. Our next question is about catcher this season. The catcher battle between Zach Plunkett and Casey Opitz, they both played in the opener. They both had multi-hit games on day one. Opitz probably looks like he's a little bit ahead of Plunkett, but the question here, what's your take on the catcher battle between Zach Plunkett and Casey Opitz?
The good news is they've got two, and they can either one play. And
I think that's important, Clay, because you think about what Grant Cook did last year and even the year before when he's catching 65 games, 63 games. We saw him 2 years in a row, his body kind of wear down toward the end of the season. I don't know if that hurt him defensively, but you could really see him not be able to get his legs into you know, his at-bats the way he was able to do early in the season. And so it affected him offensively late in the year. So, you know, maybe it helps there.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you've got guys that can, you know, when you have double headers because of rain or whatever reason, you can split it up. You don't have to put too much on it. And you know, it's a long season and slumps happen. And there's some times you just need to sit somebody down for a game or two. But all it takes is one foul tip for a catcher to be out for a month. Yeah. And so, you just have to have depth at that position. I can remember seeing Grant Cook. I guess he kind of turned his ankle a little bit. Everybody was worried that it might be an Achilles, and he's writhing in pain. And you're thinking, uh-oh, what have they got? Casey Opitz, what kind of catcher are you? We had no idea.
But
I don't think that they really would worry, you know, that defensively either one of those guys. Now, I think Casey Opitz brings something to the plate because of his switch hitting ability and the ability to hit and run, do a lot of things with the bat. And, you know, then Plunkett, he's got legit home run power. You make a mistake up and into him with the breaking pitch, and he's going to hit it 390 feet to dead left field. And so there's a little bit of, you know, thought of about what he could do if he figures out, you know, kind of reduce some of his swing and misses. I don't think you're going to see a huge fall off at catcher. And that's, you know, saying something when the kind of respect that you and I both have for, you know, for Grant Cook.
Next question is about Matt Goodhart. Goodhart was 3-for-9, I think, and the first weekend had a had a few RBI. Or I'm sorry, had one RBI. Played left field. I think he might have DH'd in one game. Clay, what do you think of Matt Goodhart? And you know, I thought defensively, you know, both offensively and defensively, I wonder what you think about him. That's what this question is. You know, I thought defensively they were in a little bit of a conundrum in game three when EIU is making its rally. I think it's in the top of the eighth inning of that game. And a couple of those hits go right at Matt Goodhart. And I'm sitting there thinking, I think Christian Franklin might have been able to make that play. Maybe Christian Franklin's able to make a better throw. But Matt Goodhart's supposed to come up in the batting order, you know, the next time up. And then you saw Christian Franklin come in and play left in the top of the ninth inning. Franklin's a better defender, but I wonder what you think of Goodhart there. And do you think maybe left field is where he's going to stick? Or do you think maybe he moves to first base at some point this year?
Yeah, I think he could be first baseman, and he could also be DH. And that's one of the places they used him in the fall. He's a left-handed bat with power, so you could see him platoon some as well. I mean, he may play against right-handers. He may sit against left-handers. We didn't see that this weekend, but he did commit to a sinking line drive that ended up being a double. You have late in the game, you have to knock that ball down. And I'm sure that was a coaching point when that half inning was over with Dave Van Horn with his new outfielder. But he's thought to be a good defensive player, but he is not on the same level defensively as Franklin. And that's a decision they'll have to make. And you know, it's in, you know, there's another factor in there. Jordan McFarland can play first base if he hits.
He did hit in the game.
There's some options
out
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some options and some things that still have to play out. And, you know, I asked Dave Van Horn about that after one of the games, and he says, hey, we're just going to look at numbers. We're going to see who gets hot, who's not hot. We're going to check batting practice. You know, everything about it will come into play. And, but Goodhart was somebody that early in fall did not hit, and turned out he had a little bit of an injury when he first got here. And the second part of fall, he was terrific, and kind of went with what the scouting report was when he was at San Jacinto. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of upside to him, but he'll have to do it over the next, you know, 3 weeks when they're making decisions on how they play it when they get into conference play.
You know, one thing I've noticed about Dave Van Horn throughout his career is that as the season gets later, you know, as you get deeper into the season, it seems like he always elects for defense more than he does the offense.
Yeah, I can remember being on a fishing trip with Todd Butler years ago, and we were kind of going through the lineup, and he had just come from Alabama, and they had had a mash team. I mean, mm-hmm. home runs up and down the lineup, and I think it was a team that got to the College World Series. And he said, well, now Dave's making a decision on this guy, offense versus defense. And he said he'll go with offense early in the year. And if that guy is, somebody like a Zach Cox or a Heston Kerstad, they'll stay in the lineup. But he said, as soon as they slump a little bit, it's defense.
Yeah.
that's pretty much, Todd called that right. And I mean, that's not saying that's right or wrong. It's if they're not going to produce, he's going to protect his pitcher. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. That's baseball.
I thought Zeb Vermillion had a little bit of tough luck on Sunday. He's asked to come in basically for one bat. And, you know, first pitch gives up a hit. Right-on-right situation, you have Matt Cronin ready to come in and face a left-hander. I think they want Vermillion to be the setup man, and that's what this question is. Do you think Zeb Vermillion is really going to be the setup man for this team? I think they want him to be that, you know, in that role. Do you foresee that he's going to be able to do that successfully?
If he's got to hit his spots when he comes in. You can throw that fastball 96, but if it's sitting in the middle of the plate with no movement, the SEC hitters will ring you up. And it's pretty much common knowledge that his stuff sometimes doesn't move. It sits up in the zone, and it might be upper 90s, but he's got to put that fastball down if he's going to be successful in those late inning. Otherwise it'll be one at bat and they'll come get him, because they do have a great lefty sitting down there in the bullpen.
Next question is about Kevin Copps. We didn't see him pitch in the opening weekend. Of course, he's coming off Tommy John surgery in the fall of 2017. It was such a big part of what they did when he was a freshman in the 2017 season. The question is, when does he get to pitch? I wouldn't be surprised to see him pitch this weekend at Southern California, maybe get an inning or two out there. It's hard, I think, Clay, don't you think, when you're coming back from Tommy John surgery and you're being asked to pitch in just brutally cold conditions like what we had the first weekend. On Saturday, you're talking about temperatures maybe not even above freezing, and the wind chills were in the low 20s and even into the teens that night.
Yeah, I think that from what I've been told, when they came back from Christmas, he was really good for a couple of outings, and then he had some stiffness and soreness, and it's just the typical stuff that you have coming back from Tommy John. And they backed off on him at that point and just said, hey, we're going to just let you pitch out of the bullpen. And when I say that, I'm sure that was indoors in warmth this weekend that he got a bullpen, and it was really good. And I think you'll see him pitch an inning or two. Just depends on how many pitches. When you come back from Tommy John, Matt, the one thing that you lose a little bit is the command. You might have your velocity, but you're not able to just fine tune your location. And that's what he always has been good. No walks, can throw a cut fastball that dives out of the zone and then can hit it for a strike when he needs to. They're gonna work him back slowly. But I think before the season's over, and it's a long season, you could still see him be a starter at some point.
And then the final question, Clay, that was submitted to us on our message boards at wholehogsports.com, this is kind of a fun one. Who would win a race between Casey Martin and Christian Franklin, and does anyone else on the team compare to those two in terms of speed? I looked up their 60 times. In football, it's the 40-yard dash, and in baseball, it's the 60-yard dash. It's kind of the, the go-to measurable for speed. And this is based on their high school speeds, and so it could have changed, between now and then. But in high school, Christian Franklin ran a 6.50 60, and Casey Martin ran a 6.53 60. So, very close race, I think, between those two.
Yeah, here's how I'm going to answer the question. And this, you probably say this is a cop out. I think from home plate to first, I think Casey Martin's faster. I think he's quicker. I think from first base to third base, Christian Franklin is faster. And we're talking about just a hair difference either one. And I may be wrong on both of those, but that's my take.
Yeah,
I don't think either one of them are as fast as is Tanner English, the South Carolina.
Hey, I looked that one up too. 6.3660 is what he ran.
I knew the ESPN crew would, if we said they're faster than Tanner English, they would correct us.
Yeah. For sure. And as far as, does anyone compare in speed? I don't know that he's as fast, but I was really impressed to see how well Curtis Washington ran the bases the other day.
Oh yeah, he's got good speed and really, this whole team is solid in the speed category. You're going to see them run more. You're going to see more hit and runs, and you get the right combination of guys on there. And I think it might be some fun to see what they do with the pressure they put on catchers. And everybody throws well in the SEC, but it's this is a different type of Arkansas team as far as speed, and I think you'll You'll see hit and runs. You'll see bunt and runs. You'll see squeezes. A lot of different ways to maybe manufacture some runs with this bunch.
Yeah. So at the first weekend, you know, they're late in the game. It was small ball that ended up winning Arkansas the game. Clay, appreciate you coming on with us this evening.
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate and I enjoy the way you cover college baseball, and I think that's one of the things that sets our site apart is your passion for college baseball, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate it. Clay Henry, the publisher of Hogs Illustrated. When we come back, Joe Healy, a podcaster and writer for Baseball America. He'll talk to us about Southern Cal, also some of the other opponents on Arkansas's upcoming schedule. You're listening to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app, presented by Absolute Heat and Air. Check out the all-new Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app is presented by Absolute Heat and Air. For the absolute best service, trust Absolute Heat and Air.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Matt Jones, joined now by Joe Healy. Joe is a writer and podcaster for Baseball America. I went on Joe's old podcast a couple of times, so Joe, I figured it was good for you to return the favor.
Yeah, happy to do it, Matt. I appreciate it.
So, Joe, I wanted to talk to you some about Southern Cal. That's who Arkansas will play this coming week. Games at 9 o'clock on Thursday Central Time, 8 o'clock Friday and Saturday. Of course, those are normal times in California, but some late nights for Razorback fans sitting up, you know, here at home in Arkansas watching. I wonder, what did you see from Southern Cal in their season opening series against University of Nebraska Omaha when they went 2-1?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a red flag for USC that they didn't really dominate that series. You know, they lost the one game on Sunday, 12-9. And then the first game, they kind of squeaked that one out. They trailed for a decent amount of that game. I watched a little bit of it, streamed it when I had the chance, and it was close. Now, they blew them out in the Saturday game, so there's that. But that's really a series that, you know, if you're a Pac-12 team, any Pac-12 team, you know, we don't have USC projected as a regional team right at this point. But still, any Pac-12 team, you kind of figure they should handle that series a little bit better. So it's a little bit of a red flag there. Now, some of that's just, you know, first weekend's always kind of tough to gauge, you know, teams maybe haven't had a chance to gel quite yet. So there's always kind of those variables you have to let go. And I think some of the performances they didn't get from some of the players you expect to be their biggest contributors might suggest that was kind of the case. But certainly it's not exactly a great look for them to come out and struggle like they did with Omaha. Now, they could, you know, big series against Arkansas and obviously a big-time opponent, and I imagine, you know, the weather's going to be good. It is Southern California, so I imagine they're going to put a lot of folks in the stands, and maybe that creates some atmosphere, and they kind of play up to the competition. But certainly in that first series, it probably wasn't the start that Dan Hubbs and his staff were looking for.
You ever been to that ballpark?
I have not. It, you know, it's one of the historic kind of places in college baseball, Dado Field, just given the way USC was just such a power in college baseball, particularly in the 70s. But no, I actually have not. I've not been to either of the big Southern California parks with USC and then Jackie Robinson Stadium for UCLA.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people forget just how good Southern Cal is baseball. They've got 12 national championships in their program history. There's not another team that has more than six.
Yeah, they really they had a run there that I think you're right. Yeah, I think nationally, I think that's long forgotten. I mean, I think people realize maybe even more so what a power Arizona State was for a long period of time. And that's been a little more recent, I guess, as part of that. But Arizona State also has the big name pros. You know, Barry Bonds went there, for example. So that might be part of it as well. But yeah, USC had another moment in the mid-aughts. Mike Gillespie, who just retired as the head coach at UC Irvine, had a nice run at USC. And I think they had a team in, I believe it was 2005, that was really quite good. And they made a regional again in 2015. But yeah, they just really haven't been able to put it together in quite the same way. I mean, they're never going to be back to being as dominant as they were back in the 70s. That's just not modern college baseball. But they just really haven't been able to put it all together quite yet, you know, under Dan Hubbs. But yeah, certainly a program that has a ton of history.
I was really impressed with Dan Hubbs when I saw him or when I spoke to him last season when they came to Fayetteville, that he's at least got the, you get the impression that he might be able to do something with that program. Talking with Joe Healy from Baseball America about the Razorbacks series this weekend at USC. And Joe, the starting rotation has been announced now for the series, and USC will throw Quentin Longrie on Thursday, Kyle Hurt, a right-hander, on Friday, and a left-hander, John Beller, on Saturday against the Razorbacks. You told me that you think Hurt is their best pitcher, but in Arkansas, it might be Longrie, who people remember the best. Last year, 7 1/3 innings, didn't allow a run until his final inning, and he pitched USC to a heck of a win at Baum Stadium last year, a 3-1 win that was one of only four losses that Arkansas had at home a year ago.
Yeah, so certainly that's some interesting history that you wonder how that's going to go if it's, it's hard to imagine. It's a completely new team, so it's hard to imagine necessarily there's just something there specific to Arkansas, but that is interesting history, and you wonder if it's something that goes one direction or the other with him. Kyle Hurt's their best pitcher in terms of, particularly in the prospect sense. He's their best 2019 pitching prospect. He's a guy who's going to be in the low 90s with his fastball with, 11-5. Breaking ball and a changeup. He was just okay last weekend against Omaha, 5 innings pitched. He did strike out 6, but gave up 3 runs, 2 earned. Beller's a guy who is kind of more of your classic just college pitcher, but he was outstanding against Omaha, 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, no runs, 2 walks, just 5 strikeouts. So, this is an area where they got something from a guy like Beller, who, like I said, is kind of more of a solid college pitcher. And, if Kyle Hurt puts it more together against Arkansas and has a little bit of a better outing, that is the path I see where, USC could certainly compete with Arkansas and challenge to win the series if they get those types of pitching performances like they got from Beller last weekend. If Kyle Hurt steps up and is a little bit better this weekend, and hey, if Quentin Longrie can kind of replicate what he was able to do last year against Arkansas, that puts him in good position to be able to at least compete. Mm-hmm.
Joe, what did you think of what Arkansas did in the opening weekend against Eastern Illinois?
Well, I liked a couple things. The first thing is they really didn't mess around. I see a lot of times with these opening weekend series for power conference teams, particularly ones who are highly ranked, it kind of feels like they sleepwalk a little bit. And maybe that's unfair. Sometimes maybe they just get a stiffer test than they expected or what have you. But you do often see times where the power conference team will get up on the mid-major early and then kind of put in cruise control and just kind of coast through the series. But Arkansas really didn't do that. They kind of kept their foot on the gas the first two games, took care of business there. And sure, the 3-2 win on Sunday isn't going to necessarily blow anybody away. But I actually kind of like that too, because I like that they got pushed in that first weekend. Because you want to learn something about your team. And blowing a team out 3 times, you may not necessarily learn that much, except that, we can put up runs in bunches when we have a talent advantage and a depth advantage. So I think getting pushed in that third game is a good thing to kind of moving forward. And I think it also helps that it was a walk-off win, because those types of wins, you can build on as a team, and they're good for team bonding, and it makes, it's a nice punctuation mark at the end of the weekend. So I really kind of liked what I saw for a few different reasons. And you have to like individual pitching performances along the way, Connor Noland and Jacob Kostyshak. And you could talk to that a little bit more than I could, but I looking at it from afar, I kind of felt pretty encouraged about, what you saw from those guys, with Isaiah Campbell being Isaiah Campbell and knowing what he's capable of at the top end.
I thought it played out remarkably similar to Arkansas's season opening series against Bucknell last year. In game 2 of that series, Arkansas won 32-4. They came back on Sunday, and it was a 3-1 game. What do you think it is about when teams – you seem to see this a lot, and I know a pitcher can change a lot of things, but it seems like when a team has a really good day offensively one day, a lot of times it doesn't come together for them the next day. What do you think that is?
Well, I think someone who's particularly data-driven, if we're going to look at it from just a data standpoint, I think somebody would probably tell you that it's just kind of water finding its level, regression to the mean. That's probably the most logical explanation. If we wanted to go beyond that, I think there's probably something to it's hard to stay that focused and kind of, put together good at-bat after good at-bat after good at-bat that it takes to score 32 runs, for example, for that long. These are human beings we're talking about, and it's hard to stay that locked in. And on the other side of it, You know, I'd be pretty upset if I gave up 32 runs. And so, you know, if you're Arkansas and you win the first two games of the series handily, and, you know, winning that third game, is you may not necessarily be as sharp as you were in the first two games, but the other team's going to be probably a little bit sharper because they, you know, they're kind of upset and they probably got chewed in the dugout at the end of that game and are on the bus back to the hotel or what have you. So depending on how you feel about motivation, I think that probably is a decent explanation as well, that, you know what, that sucked. And I don't want to feel that way again. And we need to do something about it. So it's, you know, I think it's maybe a combination of things ranging from just kind of a coincidence to, you know, it's tough to blow somebody out like that multiple games in a row, just because I think there's motivation involved as well.
Dave Van Horn was saying that his pitchers were coming back to the mound in between innings against Eastern Illinois, even on Saturday when Arkansas won pretty handily both games, saying, Coach, that's a pretty good team right there. What are your impressions of Eastern Illinois, at least going into the season?
Yeah, I think they've got some talent in some spots. I think they're, you know, the OVC is kind of a strange league. Last year was a little bit of an outlier with the OVC because Tennessee Tech, as you probably remember, was just so good. But that's typically kind of one of those leagues that beats up on each other quite a bit. So it's hard to tell from year to year, like who the front runners are. Sometimes they don't emerge until as the season really gets going. But I like some pieces of what Eastern Illinois has. Jimmy Govern is a legit draft prospect. He's their shortstop, and you know, I really like his game a whole lot. The funny thing about Eastern Illinois is, you know, they had the potential to be even a little bit better. They had a guy, you know, Andy Fisher was a guy they had on their roster, and he actually transferred to University of Illinois a couple of years ago, and he's the Illinois Saturday starter, and Illinois is a team that very well could be in a regional at the end of the year. So there was potential for them to be even a little bit better. Now, they lost, Eastern Illinois did, quite a bit after last season, so I don't know about their ability to compete at the top of the OVC, but this is certainly not a team without talent. So that's the other part of, you know, quote-unquote only winning 3-2 on Sunday that I don't think there's any reason to hang your head about. I think Eastern Illinois is a pretty talented team, you know, certainly not any sort of bottom feeder in the OVC. There's talent there.
Joe, you were at the College World Series last season. You got to see Arkansas up close a lot of times. I wonder, what did you think about that run and what you saw from Arkansas, you know, during that run and maybe how it all ended?
Yeah, I mean, the ending, of course, I guess, is that's just a tough thing to have to overcome. It's one of the things I was most interested to see this year is just how does a team bounce back from that?
Yeah.
Because you can say all of the right things and mentally it just be a really tough thing to bounce back from. On the other hand, I could also see it be a little bit freeing that you're back on the field, you know, and that's not your most recent baseball memory in an Arkansas uniform anyway. So that was obviously tough. But, you know, when things were going well, I thought this a couple times last year when Arkansas was really playing at its full potential, just from a fan standpoint, just me being someone who enjoys watching baseball, they were about as fun to watch as just about anybody. They could put up runs in bunches. If you let that offense get rolling, you probably weren't going to be able to stop them. And they had enough pitching, obviously, to kind of supplement that. So I thought it was just a really fun team to watch. And there were times last year where I thought they were probably the best team in college baseball for a lot of those reasons. So I really enjoyed kind of watching that run. I was excited to see them in Omaha because for an offense like theirs, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Sure, they hit a lot of home runs. And so there's always this thought, I think, that home runs go to die at TD Ameritrade Park, but it's also just a big outfield. And if you're a doubles hitting team, like you can kind of thrive there.
Yeah.
You know, if you can find the gap. So I think it's actually not as much of a pitcher's park as people think for different reasons maybe, but really good team, a team that I'm going to remember for a long time. And not just because of the way it ended, I guess you could cynically say you're going to remember the way it ended more than anything else. But I actually just think I'm going to remember that team being a lot of fun to watch and being a very, very, very good offense that, you know, it's going to be hard for anybody to replicate.
Of course, Arkansas was able to hit some home runs at the World Series. I think about the one that Dominic Fletcher just about hit off the scoreboard against Texas Tech after a rain delay. Hey, I wonder, have you ever seen a crowd in Omaha quite like you saw for those, you know, first two games of the World Series final, where it seemed like, you know, there are probably 6,000 or 7,000 more people in red than there are even at Baum Stadium for a weekend game?
Yeah, that's tough to match. I mean, you know, and the thing about that is it kind of shows the draw of some of those fan bases like Arkansas that draw really, really well, because sometimes the championship series isn't necessarily the most electric atmosphere. And it doesn't just have to do with the teams that are involved. It's also the fact that, it's kind of hard to plan for your team to be there because so much stuff has to go right for them to even get to that point. Mm-hmm. And it's on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday instead of on the weekend. So if you're relatively local, it's hard, you know, a little bit harder logistically to get out there. But yeah, I think it speaks to, you know, it speaks to a fan base like Arkansas that travels so well and shows up so well. And, you know, frankly, Oregon State as well. I mean, they take over some of those parking lots around TD Ameritrade Park. So I just think it was kind of a confluence of things that created such a good atmosphere that is not necessarily always the case in the championship series.
I think it's been interesting, Joe, since Arkansas lost in the championship series, that the recruiting, at least based on the rankings, has – I don't know that I can ever remember Arkansas doing anything like it's done. According to Perfect Game, Arkansas's got 8 commits among their top 51 national players in 2020, for instance. I wonder, what do you think the draw is of playing for Dave Van Horn in this program? And how maybe and also maybe how the World Series has impacted their recruiting so far, but you know, with the way recruiting works and you're recruiting 13, 14-year-old players, you know, how it might impact classes of 2022, 2023 and on.
Yeah, it's you know, because recruiting starts so early now, just like in all college sports, baseball certainly not alone on that. But yeah, you just have to kind of remember that, you know, some of these things that are happening now, you know, by the time these kids get to campus, or even really by the time they're kind of finalizing their decisions, mm-hmm. really and truly, these things are kind of ancient history. So it's hard to know how much it plays into some of these kids that are you know, not even in high school or underclassmen in high school. But certainly, it certainly can't hurt because for a lot of kids, even now, I remember when I was growing up, the only college baseball you could, unless you went out to the park, of course, but talking on TV, the only college baseball you could really expect to see was the College World Series because that was on ESPN. And now there's a lot more college baseball on TV during the regular season, but even still, you kind of have to seek it out and it really doesn't get going on TV until basketball's over. And so, you know, for a lot of these kids, that's probably still mostly the case. Most of the college baseball they consume is the College World Series on ESPN. And so that's a powerful thing. I think seeing Arkansas there or whoever it is, TCU is a great example. They went 4 years in a row, you know, that's a really, really powerful thing. Even now, I think sometimes people try to downplay kids don't watch TV or, you know, they're on their phones or what all this, you know, the stuff that people talk about, millennials and what have you. But I think it's still a pretty powerful thing when you're on ESPN proper, you know, not ESPN Plus or ESPN3 or even ESPN2. When you're on ESPN primetime in the summer, when people are watching baseball, I think that's a pretty powerful thing. And to your first question about Dave Van Horn, I just think, for one, he's proven to be able to win with a lot of different types of teams. He's won over a long period of time. There haven't been any sort of consistent dips in Arkansas's performance. There have been individual years that didn't go the way he would have wanted, I'm sure. But over the course of his career at Arkansas, he's just won. He's just won a lot of games. And he can look a recruit, you know, in the eyes and tell him with some pretty good certainty that you're going to have a chance to go to Omaha. And he can back that up. And that's, you know, that's something that's really, really compelling to these kids who really, really want to play college baseball in the SEC. Mm-hmm. That's something he has over a lot of other programs. Now there are other SEC programs that can say the same, sure. But you know, some of it also is the draw to, you know, he puts a lot of players into pro baseball and he develops players. And some of that's the assistant coaches, of course. He's not a one man show, but I just think it's a combination of things. It's also, you know, he's someone who's definitely about his players. I think that's a powerful thing as well. As someone, he's about the player experience. He's about developing players. He's not a coach who makes it about himself. And I think that's something that players notice, even if maybe they don't, you know, that's not the way they're thinking about it. I think they can pick up on that kind of thing. And so I think all those things combined make it a really attractive place for kids to go play their college baseball.
Joe, I know you had a chance to go out opening weekend. You got to see Kentucky in its series opener against Austin Peay. I wonder, what do you make of the SEC this season with all of these teams in the top 25? And it's not a surprise to anyone. I mean, obviously, I think we'd all agree that the SEC probably is the strongest conference, you know, from 1 to 14. But I just wonder what you think about the league and what are you looking for as the season unfolds?
Yeah, so, you're right. I mean, it's life in the SEC is only getting harder. You know, and I've said this about a couple different teams. I said it about Tennessee earlier in the year on one of the podcasts that we recorded with Baseball America, and I said it about Kentucky, is that, you know, there's talent here, but somebody's got to lose games in the SEC. You know, so we've got a team like Kentucky on the outside looking in. We've got a team like Tennessee on the outside looking in. But, you know, some of the teams that have been down in the SEC for the last decade or so are trending in the right direction. Georgia was down for several years. Well, they hosted a regional last year, and they look pretty doggone good again this year. You know, Tennessee's pitching staff, now it remains to be seen, you know, offensively Tennessee's got some questions to answer, but pitching-wise, Tennessee's got a chance to be really, really good. They've been down and haven't been to a regional since 2005. That's trending in the right direction now. Alabama's trending in the right direction. You know, Kentucky has typically kind of been up and down as a program, and they seem to be getting more consistent and kind of moving in a positive direction. So, you know, everyone seems to be getting better. There's really no obvious teams that are getting markedly worse, at least so far as we can tell. But someone's going to have to, you know, not everyone is going to win every game, obviously. And so now that could mean I could see conceivably maybe there's a team that we have some questions about that really just struggles more than we think. But I think more likely is what ends up happening is kind of what we've seen more lately, where you have a really big group of teams kind of in the middle of the conference to go 13-17, 14-16, 15-15, 16-14, 17-13. And it's going to be really, I mean, the margins are going to be so thin on, you know, who gets into the field of 64 and who doesn't, especially if conference record ends up being a big metric. And there's evidence to suggest that recently that has been the case. You know, the conference record has been pointed to as something that has kind of been important to the committee. So, you know, the difference, obviously, I don't have to tell you, you know, I was no math major, but I don't have to tell you that, you know, 13-17 and 15-15 is not a huge difference over the course of an entire SEC slate. But that could be the difference between getting into a regional and not getting into a regional when it's all said and done. So the league continues to get better, and I'm really interested to see how that ends up, you know, coming out on the other end here, because there are some teams, and like I mentioned up top, that probably have regional talent, and as recently as 5-6 years ago might have been shoe-ins to be regional teams that you just can't count on that because of how competitive the league is from top to bottom.
Before I get you out of here, putting you on the spot for a minute, I wonder if you've got any general thoughts about the two opponents who are coming up after Southern Cal for Arkansas, Memphis in a midweek game, and then Stony Brook comes into Baum Walker Stadium for three.
Yeah, Memphis, just a couple quick thoughts, I guess, on each. You know, Memphis competed pretty well against Indiana last weekend. I thought Indiana was clearly the better team there, and they are the better team. But Memphis won one of the games there and was competitive otherwise. So Memphis may be a little bit better than I thought, perhaps. A player to watch there is their shortstop, Alec Trella, the guy I really enjoy watching. He's a guy who has some pop in his bat. He's a kind of a bigger, stronger shortstop. If you looked at him and didn't know what position he plays, you probably wouldn't put shortstop on him. But he makes all the plays at shortstop, made something like 3 errors last year. So really, really steady at the position, hits with some power. You know, is Memphis's best prospect, a guy who's been productive for them since he was a freshman. So just kind of a name to watch there. Stony Brook, this is not necessarily your father's Stony Brook. I mean, if you remember that College World Series run, but that's a really high standard for them to live up to. But they have been really good ever since then. The quality of play really hasn't dipped there. They came off of last weekend, they just won 2 of 3 at Florida International. Florida International team that I think is pretty good. Now, we don't have them in the field of 64, Florida International, but they've got a lot of really good, talented players. They've recruited really, really well there the last couple of years, and I think eventually that's going to pay dividends for FIU. Maybe not this year, but I wouldn't have picked Stony Brook to win that series, and they did so. Nick Grande is a player to watch them. He's their shortstop. He took a big jump with his bat last year, took a step forward and hit with some pop, handles the bat really, really well. Michael Wilson, their center fielder, had a big weekend last weekend against FIU, hitting .571. So a couple names there for Stony Brook. They're going to be competitive. They're going to be a game team there. Certainly you would expect Arkansas to win that series, but that's not a series where Arkansas is going to be able to come in there, sleepwalk, and win the series. They're going to have to play there. Kind of a similar thing with, you didn't ask me about this team, but Louisiana Tech is after that.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a really, really fun series. Louisiana Tech is a team we have in the field of 64. I've actually got a piece on Louisiana Tech going up on the site Thursday. That's a really veteran team. All three of their starting rotation members are seniors. They return 8 of their 9 starters from last year in the lineup and three or four of their top bullpen arms. You know, they've just got a really athletic, physical lineup. They get something from everybody. They don't have a lot of mashers necessarily. I don't know that anybody in their lineup is going to hit 15 home runs, but everybody in their lineup is going to hit 5, 6, or 7. They've got an outfielder named Mason Millard, I guess maybe how it's pronounced, but probably the fastest base runner in Conference USA. They've got a shortstop named Taylor Young last year who walked three times more than he struck out, handles the bat really, really well. They've got some power throughout the lineup. Steele Netterville is a guy who has some power. Tanner Huddleston has some power. But they're a team that does a lot of stuff really, really well. Maybe not elite necessarily in any particular area, but they're a team that's not going to beat themselves. They're a team that does a lot of things really well. And I think that's going to be just a really, really interesting series because I think this is a team that knows they have the potential to be a regional team. Last year, they fell maybe one or two wins short. They won 39 games last year, maybe one or two wins short of getting an at-large bid. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty motivated to get in this year. So again, that's going to be one not only that Arkansas can't just go in and sleepwalk through, but actually in that series, they're going to have to play really, really well to win that series. I don't think that's going to be any sort of walkover for the Razorbacks.
Arkansas and Louisiana Tech had a great series in Ruston a couple of years ago. Arkansas came back from a 9-run deficit to beat them in a game there and split the series. So it's Arkansas has got a really good non-conference schedule. I think it's going to test them for their SEC schedule. Joe, we appreciate your time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Joe Healy of Baseball America joining us on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. We will be back next week. We will recap the Southern Cal series, and we will look ahead to Arkansas and Stony Brook on March 1st through the 3rd. Until then, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.